Welcome to the Do Paranormal Podcast, studying your favorite vampires, Joe Vampire and Jennifer Vampire.
I don't have a vampire accent.
You'll have one now. Blah, blah, blah. So welcome, everybody. This week's show, it's all about vampires.
Oh, yeah.
So buckle up, buttercups, because it's about to go down. How was your week, Joey?
Good.
Yeah? Good. What happened? What's new?
Well, I saw a video on YouTube on how to make an upright garden.
Oh, fancy.
So I went and bought all the wood and I made it. It was actually pretty easy. So I'm going to make a few of those and maybe make a couple for mom and dad and put some around the yard or something. I don't know.
That's cool.
It was neat. I mean, just try something different and get outside and do some woodworking out.
Oh my gosh, so nice out today. It's been beautiful in the last couple of days. Got my car washed. First time all winter.
I have to do that yet, but.
Cost me $15. Holy crap.
They're calling for snow on Sunday.
You hush.
They are.
Hush your mouth. Hush your vampire mouth.
Before we get started, popped in my head.
What
is your favorite vampire movie?
Underworld, the original.
That was easy.
That was easy. I've only seen it like 200 times.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was Jack in that?
No. Richard.
Oh, Richard.
Yeah,
was?
Richard Citrone. He's an actor and a stuntman who I based one of my characters in my book off of.
Oh.
Never fall for the stuntman.
My favorite all time, the best vampire movie of all time is called What We Do in Shadows.
Oh.
Or In the Shadows.
I haven't seen that one.
You got to see it. I'm not going to tell you about it, but it's by far the best vampire movie out there. It's a documentary, really, but it's a movie.
I might watch one tonight.
Watch that one.
No, I love Underworld. That's the best. Yeah. Okay, we got to get off that talk. I was going to start sweating over here thinking about the stuntman.
We were. I have a couple of stories from New Orleans or New Orleans.
New Orleans.
I keep saying it.
We
said
it wrong.
Last week we said it wrong the whole time, and our cousin caused it. You're saying it wrong.
Sorry.
But down in New Orleans.
New Orleans.
I know you're going to hear us talk about New Orleans in the next few weeks and drive it. You're going to be insane. You're going to be calling us and emailing us saying, all right, already, we heard about it. Stop talking. But while we were there, I did see a vampire walking down the street.
He had a sighting.
He had a cape.
Yes.
Which, you know, all right, there's two kinds, really, of vampires. That consider themselves real vampires. You have the lifestylers who dress in more of a Victorian style, more elegant. They spend a lot of time outside at night. They go to a lot of parties. So they're partiers, which who isn't in New Orleans, you know?
Oh my God, yes.
Or New Orleans. I'm just going to say it wrong.
Just call it NOLA.
NOLA. And so the lifestylers are the more subtle, I want to say. You can tell them by their Victorian dress and all that. And they also have ones that's called role players. Now, the role players dress more traditional with the capes, like the guy that I saw. And they claim to come from different clans a lot. And really, in the lifestyler type community, they refer to it as the house. They say, I'm from the house of.
Okay.
So that would be the two different types. I know there's more people that have different styles than that and consider themselves vampires. Now, seeing that we're titling the show The Real Vampires, there are, in history, there are different people that claim to be real vampires.
You know, a lot of them you would never know. Like, there's doctors, lawyers, pharmacists, people that live their normal life and keep it, you know, on the subculture, I guess you would say.
Sort of like me. I live my normal life, and then at night, I'm a sexy beast.
Yeah, I don't want to know. So there's a gentleman who wrote an article. His name was John Edgar Browning. He wrote the story called What I Learned Studying Real Vampires. And he was saying that, you know, you don't stereotype people as vampires unless they were out there, just normal people who, you know, have normal jobs, doctors, lawyers, you know, shop workers, whatever. And what's interesting, he said that there's hierarchical system. So there's elders and then, you know, new members, a large population in New Orleans, but also in Buffalo, New York, which I thought was interesting
because
it's a very snowy community. Okay, so anyways, you know, what is a vampire? What makes a person a vampire? So, you know, there's a couple characteristics from vampire legends. The main characteristics, of course, is they drink human blood.
Yeah.
Typically drain their blood using their sharp fangs, killing them, and then turning them into vampires. Now, nowadays, there's two types of vampires, right? There's ones that physically drink blood, and then there's energy vampires.
Yeah, and we've talked about energy vampires before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my question is, what happens when you physically drink somebody else's blood?
Well, I don't know. Gross?
Like,
well, it's definitely gross, but
I mean, is it bad for you? I mean, I know I'm not saying it's gross. I mean,
I would think if you drank too much, it would be bad, because I do know that if you get blood in your stomach and all that from a gastrointestinal bleed, it does coagulate really a lot, turns into that black liquid like we talked about, the yellow fever.
Yeah.
It basically does the same thing, because I know that as an EMT, when I was doing that, that was one of the signs of an internal bleed or different illnesses, is they would throw up black.
Oh my gosh. You know, can't imagine. Blood. That's so gross.
Yeah, but that's what it does. And I just cannot see people drinking a lot. Maybe a wine glass worth or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know how much.
I mean, we've all licked our own wounds, right? And tasted blood.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a paper cut, you automatically stick it in your mouth, which I got a really bad one today.
I was
going to
say, I did that today. I hit one of the tools at work and sliced my thumb open, and it was bleeding. So I just sucked on it. On the blood.
Your saliva has healing properties. That's why they say licking your wounds, you know, because animals lick their wounds because that helps heal it. This is kind of interesting, talking about Vlad the Impaler,
who
was, you know, famously thought of as the original vampire. He was, why they would call him a vampire is because he would enjoy dining amidst his victims. Yeah. So like he would impale people on giant spikes and then sit there and have dinner, and he would dip his bread in their blood and eat it. It's so gross. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, vampires. I don't mean to offend you, but I just couldn't do it, right?
Yeah.
I guess, you know, maybe it was different back in 1400s. But, you know, people ask, are vampires real? What do you think?
I don't know, because what are we talking about as a vampire? Are we talking about the actual person that comes out at night only, you know, and lives on blood? Or are we talking the people that call themselves vampires and sometimes drink blood and, you know, dress and act like I was mentioning earlier about the two different styles, you know? I mean, obviously there's more than just the two, but.
Right. Well, you know, it all started back in probably the late 1100s or so, mostly in Eastern Europe. There were, you know, a lot, because of the plague that went through, you know, the Europe, but then, of course, came to New Orleans. They were saying that vampire superstition thrived in the Middle Ages, especially with the plague, because it decimated entire towns. The disease left behind bleeding mouth lesions on its victims, and to the uneducated, you know, people of that time, they thought it was a sign of vampirism, because the blood would drain down their mouth
they drank blood.
They drank the blood. But it wasn't uncommon for anyone with unfamiliar physical or emotional illness to be labeled a vampire. Many of the researchers pointed to porphyria. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Don't know.
It was a blood disorder that caused severe blisters on the skin that, when you exposed it to sunlight, disease may have been linked to the vampire legend. Some of the symptoms were relieved by ingesting blood.
Oh, okay.
Of this
so
particular disease. So that also, you know, promoted the vampire myth, which included rabies and goiters.
Goiters.
Goitis. When a suspected vampire would die, their bodies would often be interred to search for signs of vampirism. So they would thrust a stake through the corpse's heart to make sure they were dead. Mm-hmm. They would decapitate them and burn the corpses in well into the 19th century. They were still doing this.
Hmm. And lots of times, too, is they would say that they're undead because their fingernails would still grow. Their hair would still grow. Mm-hmm. The teeth, you know, would come out like fangs. But the thing is, when a body is decomposing, I was going to say compositing, the skin dries up. Mm-hmm. So it makes the appearance of the nails still growing,
okay.
Makes the appearance of the hair still growing, makes the, you know, you get that colors, like you said, around the mouth and everything. The teeth stick out because the skin is shrinking and that. But, you know, talking about burying them, there were different techniques of burying. They would put rocks on the hands and the feet of vampires to hold them down.
Mm-hmm.
I did see a lot of them where they put the rocks in the mouth, and I didn't really know about that, so I looked it up, and mm-hmm. a lot of that has to do with more of the zombie type thing.
Okay.
So I don't know, rocks in the mouth, I don't know, because I tried to find information on that, and I couldn't really find anything on it.
Well, I'll have to look that up. Mm-hmm. Anything about, you had mentioned something about the grave itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, lots of times you'll see big cages over graves.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that was to keep people from stealing the bodies.
Okay.
There's different caskets in that made to keep people from grave robbing. But the vampire legend also has where they would put cages over the caskets and all that so that the vampires couldn't get out.
Wasn't there something also that they, at one time, they were making like lead-lined coffins, or mm-hmm. so vampires couldn't get in and steal bodies, or was that something else?
That I don't know.
I can't remember. And then the coffin screws that they would like screw it tight so the body couldn't rise.
Yep. They would screw the body right to it. Or
this is really interesting, and I think I saw a show on the Travel Channel. I think Josh Gates did something about this, but there were 100 medieval vampire graves in Bulgaria that they found within the last couple of years. So in the early 2000s, archaeologists across Bulgaria unearthed skeletons of people believed to be vampires. In 2004, six skeletons were discovered near Debelt. In 2012 and 2013, two were found in Skolspol. And then in 2014, archaeologists discovered another while excavating ruins of Perpikaion. I always said that right.
I don't know.
Perpikaion. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Near the Greek border. What set the skeletons, which they are believed from the 13th century, apart from ordinary remains, was the rods were driven through the chest, pinning them to the ground. When the people who were considered bad or evil in medieval Bulgaria, they would do this as a precaution so they wouldn't rise from the dead at night and feast on the unsuspecting victims.
Drink their blood.
So they believe there's there over 100 vampire graves in Bulgaria. So this must have been a really, you know, important thing in their mm-hmm. culture. You know, back in the day.
Back in the day.
In the 1400s or 1500s, but I would love to go there and see it. I that would be like so cool. It would be amazing.
So if any listener out there would like to send us $1 million so that we can go traveling.
Yeah. Josh Gates, Zach Bagan, just send us some money so we can travel. Or just pick us up on your private planes.
Yeah.
They also found vampire graves in Poland.
Okay.
So just as, you know, people had pinned their corpses to the graves in Bulgaria, villagers in the 17th and 18th century in Poland also took precautions to prevent the dead from returning. They would stick large rocks under potential vampires' chins and lay sickles across their body to keep them underground. The Balkan folklore suspected that the unbaptized people considered bad and those who had died untimely deaths were at risk of returning as vampires. In a 2014 report, they revealed that Polish vampires were likely the first victims of the cholera epidemic.
Oh, okay.
Which was very interesting.
You know, lots of times when people talk about vampires and that, this woman comes up, Elizabeth Bathory, and I'm sure you've all heard about her. She was one that would kill young ladies and actually bathe in their blood.
She thought it was the Fountain of Youth or something.
That was back around the 1500s.
Whatever happened to her?
I don't know. Last time I talked to her was...
It's interesting.
She did give birth to... I have the webpage in front of me here just so I remember to mention her. But it says she gave birth to 3 daughters and a son.
Interesting.
And lived happily ever after. I don't know.
Yeah, all right.
But yeah, she would actually take like little girls, cut them up, drain all their blood into her bathtub, and actually bathe in it.
Oh my gosh. I wonder if she looked young or what.
I don't know.
A thing.
She probably looked really red.
Called the vampire facial.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where they take and do something. I don't even know if they poke your skin and let your own blood on your face or something. I don't even know. I have to look it up.
Well, you know, back in the day, which I think was a Tuesday, bloodletting was the way to cure almost everything. Yeah. You'd bleed so that you bleed out all your poisons or whatever. Poison. Yeah.
It must work. Our species has survived. We haven't evolved very much, but we've survived, right? This is interesting. This is the 18th century vampires may have suffered from rabies. All right.
That makes sense.
Get attacked by a wild raccoon. In 1998, a Spanish neurologist set out to explain the 18th century vampire outbreaks in which vampires were allegedly spotted killing animals and terrorizing communities at night. The best possible explanation that he found was not supernatural, but medical. He said that rabies could account for nearly all vampiric behaviors, including sensitivity to garlic and light. Rabies patients have hypersensitivity. Nocturnal habits. Rabies affects part of the brain that helps regulate sleep cycles. And fatal bites. 25% of people who have been bitten croak. So that's one explanation, but you know, I don't want to run into anybody who's got rabies.
No.
Or ever get bit by some wild animal.
Some of the traits of vampires, obviously, is drinking blood, immortality, so they live forever until they get a spike or sunlight, which is like us when we're in the sunlight. It's like
we blistered so bad.
I burnt so bad, and it was still overcast out.
I bought sunscreen. We didn't put it on because it was raining that day, not thinking the sun would come out later. And so famously for vampires, where everybody thinks that it started because of, you know, like kind of the Hollywood thing is Romania.
Yeah.
So
it's where I was born, according to Facebook.
I know. The same city where I put my character who was born there. Surprise. Okay.
I never read your book, so.
Well, that's kind of the problem.
I don't want to read that.
You don't want to read at all.
I ain't got no learning.
You ain't got none. Okay, so people there still believe in vampires. They still think it's a real thing. So in the small villages of rural Romania, many people still turn to vampires as an explanation for confounding circumstances. As recent as 2004, a body of a man from, I'm going to mess this up, I know, Marotuni de Sus was exhumed so villagers could perform an ancient anti-vampire ritual. The man, who died suddenly in a farming accident in 2013, was believed to have returned as a Strogi. I think I said that right. a restless spirit who returns to suck the life force from his living family members. So they make the relatives sick.
Okay? Yeah.
So 6 villagers dug this man's corpse up, cut his heart out, and put stakes through his body. And then their relatives, actually, their health got better.
Oh, really?
And they say the stories like this aren't unusual. Many of the rural villagers believe that children who are born breech or with the placenta still attached become the Strogi. And when they die, they're buried with knitting needles poking through their eyes and bodies to prevent them from returning.
Nice.
Grandma's going to stick some knitting needles in you so you don't come back as a vampire.
What if they put a crochet one in there? Does that make a difference?
I don't know. Do you know the difference between knitting and crocheting?
One uses a little hooky thing and the other one uses needles.
Good job. Good job.
Everybody knows that.
I think you should take up knitting, Joe.
I think not.
I think it would not, be very relaxing for you. Not. I get it now. I don't know. Like, I think it's fascinating, interesting. I love a good vampire movie. I could watch one all day, every day. But
What We Do in the Shadows, you got to watch it.
Watch that. So you've got to watch Underworld.
I have.
Underworld Evolution.
I don't know if I've
Underworld,
seen
what's the third one? Rise of the Lycans.
I saw that one.
Slept with a lichen once.
I don't want to know this.
And then the fourth one is Underworld Awakening. I don't know. There's four or five of them.
Okay.
Ah, whatever. So anyways, real life vampires. So in the early stages of the United States, back when we were just colonies, that was a big fear and threat. You know, we had the Salem witch trials, mm-hmm. but people also were very, very afraid of vampires. They said that, you know, that there was a couple famous people, you know, famously cases that they've almost like kind of like a witch hunt, but for vampires type thing.
Vampire hunt.
Vampire hunt that we read about. So in New England in the early 1800s, or maybe it was late. No, it was the late 1800s. There was a famous case of a woman named Mercy Brown. Now, she lived in Exeter, Rhode Island, and she was a daughter of a farmer. And they lost many, many of the family members to tuberculosis. And so they used her as a scapegoat to explain all the family members' deaths. So, you know, if there was that kind of situation where, you know, all the family members started dying, maybe, you know, it was running through the family or something, they would always make and blame one person in the family for it. Like, you know, you caused all this, right?
Yeah.
So each of the bodies of the dead family members were exhumed and searched for signs of vampirism. So when they exhumed Mercy's body, it didn't display any signs of decay. And they, you know, it wasn't surprising though, because they had put her body in an above ground vault during a New England winter.
Oh.
So, you know, it's kind of probably just frozen, right? But people were accusing her of being a vampire and making everybody in her family sick from her icy grave. So they cut her heart out, burned it, and then fed the ashes to her sick brother.
Oh, nice.
And then he died.
Well, yeah. And then they probably thought he was a vampire because he died.
Right, exactly. So that was just, you know, one of the cases here in the United States. That,
it's sort of like
urban legend.
Yeah. Well, during the witch trials, when they would put someone on the end of a big stick and put them underwater, and if they drowned, then they were either, or how was, if they drowned, they were
they were innocent.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's
like,
but if they lived, they were guilty.
And then they killed.
Yeah, like it don't make any sense. But, you know, we're dealing with very, you know, like superstitious times.
Extremely, yeah. Okay, so in New Orleans, in 1902, there was a gentleman named Jacques Saint Germain. And he was very rich, okay? Lived in a huge mansion right in the middle of around the French Quarter area. I'm not sure the exact location, but right around French Quarter. And he brought a prostitute into his house. Now, she was amazed at all the marble and how beautiful the house was.
Mm-hmm.
And she was amazed at all the different carpets that were laid out everywhere. They were very expensive. Everything was top of the line. This guy was super rich, had gold everywhere.
Fancy.
Well, she was running around looking at all his stuff. And there was something about the marble. She touched the marble or that and said how cold it was. And just as she said that, he came up behind her, grabbed her, bit her neck so much that she was actually biting into her neck.
Isn't there a major vein in your neck? Oh, mm-hmm. What is that?
The carotid arteries.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And so he started biting her neck from behind and she started fighting him. All of a sudden, there was a knock at the door, which kind of startled both of them. And she broke free, jumped through a window, went over the railing, fell 20 feet to the street, okay? Broke both her legs.
Aww.
And obviously, you know, caused such an uproar in that. The men that found her on the ground, you know, went up to the mansion, up to the second floor. And this Jacques Saint Germain was nowhere to be found. And he has not been seen since then. He vanished into thin air.
Wow.
That was a true story in New Orleans. And you go to that house now, and as you know, anytime you renovate a building down in New Orleans, you cannot change the outside at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the window that she jumped through, they bricked it up instead of fixing it because he disappeared. So they bricked it up. And to this day, you go to that building and you can still see the one window is bricked up.
That's so interesting. But where would he go? Like, you think he like just jumped on a ship and went back to France
or
something?
He probably did. But as the legend goes, he vanished never to be seen again.
Okay, this is, you know, I always ask weird questions. So like, okay, you have this mansion, right? And you're rich and you disappear. What happens to your property?
Exactly. I don't know. I mean, the building's still there. You can go and see it. I'm not sure the exact location. You'd have to look that up. But yeah, what happened to all his property? They said that when they went, oh, that's another thing I want to mention. When they went into his house, it was filled with gold, stuff from, you know, all times, they said, like antiquities or whatever you want to call it from, you know, back. I mean, it was 1902, so we're looking at it as antiques. But back then, the stuff he had was
really,
really antiques. And that's where they got the thought that he was immortal because he spent all this time collecting things. But the rugs that were on the ground weren't in any kind of pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So when they started pulling the rugs up, every rug had a huge blood stain under it.
Oh, my God.
From different victims that he had.
Wow. I bet you those stains are still there.
Probably.
We need to ghost hunt in there.
No, we will. We're definitely going back.
We are going back. Oh, my God. I can't wait. I cannot wait.
But there was another story from New Orleans.
Ooh, let me hear it.
In 1928, the Carter brothers moved into New Orleans, okay? Moved into a house, and they were there. You know, they lived there peacefully. Their neighbors didn't notice anything different or that. Until one day in 1932, everybody heard a crash in that and found this little 11-year-old girl busting out a side door. She ran out in the street. She was covered in blood. She ran to the cops and got notice from the cops. The cops came back to their house. Well, first off, she said that she was kidnapped and taken to their house and tied up, gagged, bound. And what they would do is they would cut her left wrist and drink the blood from her. Okay. So the cops get back to their house. The two brothers are not there, but the cops find four other people in the main gallery or whatever you want to say in the house, all bound, gagged, tied to a chair with their left wrists cut.
Oh my gosh. How creepy.
They found four of them that were still alive and one 9-year-old girl that was dead. And they said that she's been there a while.
Oh man. Yeah. That's gruesome.
So the police waited for the brothers and they got home at night around midnight, they said, which sounds more like at midnight they arrived, you know.
At the midnight.
The porch. Yeah. So
I don't know why I keep talking like Count Chocula.
Yeah. Well, Count Chocula is a vampire.
Oh my God, that's good.
He's a chocolate
cereal.
Vampire.
That's good cereal.
But, okay, so the brothers got home. It took 18 police officers to subdue them and arrest them.
Oh, my God.
Because
gosh.
They said they were of abnormal strength.
Maybe they were, like, high on morphine or
that's,
something.
You know, maybe they were high on something, you know.
Yeah, you get, like, superhuman strength on that.
Well, not on morphine. Smack. That puts you to sleep, but, like, you know.
Whatever it was.
Uppers, man.
Uppers, dude.
So it took 18 cops to subdue them and arrest them. They were found guilty, obviously, and they're executed by the electric chair. And they said it was a very crude electric chair, so they probably fried, literally.
Oh, gross.
And they are buried in an upright tomb in the cemetery that we went through.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, I don't remember them telling it, but I looked it up and
it
says that they're buried
in
one of those upright tombs.
Oh, that's cool.
They were buried there.
I really wish we would have saw like a ghost or something in that cemetery. I kept taking pictures like, please something appear in my pictures.
One of their survivors went on to murder 32 people.
Wow.
And he got rid of their bodies by putting them in acid and melting the bodies. But he got caught and confessed to the murders.
Wow. So he was a victim and then he became a murderer.
Yeah, he killed 32 people.
A little post-traumatic.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Post-traumatic vampiric prism.
I think we should have a vampire ball or something.
All right.
Let's dress up like vampires.
And have a ball. To eat, we'll have all mac and cheese. Because vampires love mac and cheese, I'm telling you. I know.
Joe is like a mac and cheese connoisseur. Like, we're going to have to have like a mac and cheese bake party one day. And like, you know, why not? Why not? Okay, so here's a few examples of vampires from American and real life people that they called vampires, right? So there's a Peter Polowajowicz. I hope I said that right. Peter, don't haunt me. He was a Serbian villager accused of blood sucking, and he was exhumed and staked through the heart a few weeks after his death in 1725. So, you know, they said he's kind of like the quintessential European vampire. So when they exhumed him, he had, you know, his teeth had grown and his hair had grown, and you know, the whole thing that you talked about. But he was one of the first villagers to die of sickness in his particular village, and they didn't detect any odor after he died. And then his body was like completely fresh. The hair and beard had grown. The skin was whitish and peeled away, revealing like new skin underneath. And then the people had claimed they'd seen fresh blood in his mouth. There was another person. This one was in Woodstock, Vermont. Was a Dartmouth college student. His name was Frederick Ransom. And he was suspected that he died of tuberculosis in 1817. He was an educated person. And when the vampire panic broke out, it was usually about, you know, or started by more rural people. But this guy, his father exhumed his body in hopes of saving the rest of his family, because he thought, okay, you know, he's a vampire and he's going to bring sickness upon the family. So they cut his heart out and burned his heart in a blacksmith's forge, or, you know, kiln, or whatever that is. And it said it did not prove a remedy for the mother, sister, and two brothers who had died afterwards. The surviving brother, Daniel, later wrote that it had been related to me that there was a tendency in our family to consumption, which they called, you know, tuberculosis, what they used to call it, consumption, and that I would die before I was 30, but he was over 80 years old.
So it's kind of like that other story where they burned the heart. Of course, they didn't feed it to anybody.
Yeah, right. There was another in New Hampshire, Annie Dennett. She died of consumption at the age of 21 in rural New Hampshire. In September of 1810, a traveling free will Baptist minister from Vermont named Enoch Hayes Place attended her exhumation. I thought, oh God. Exhumation. All right. I hope I was saying that. So the family undertook, in an effort to save Annie's father from sickness, from tuberculosis. An entry in this Baptist minister's diary said that the participation of a respected New England minister in the vampire hunt said they opened the grave and it was a solemn sight indeed. Young brother by the name of Adams examined the moldy spectacle, but found nothing that they would suppose they should. Nothing left but a little bit of bones. Yeah.
So there are vampires out there, whether it's fictional or real, people acting like real vampires. It happens all the time.
I don't know if I've ever told this story on the show. I probably have, so just bear with me if I repeat it. But when I lived in Hollywood, California, I worked in the building that the El Capitan Theater is in. So my office was right above the marquee where the El Capitan Theater is. And, you know, if you Google Hollywood, it's one of the most famous, you know, recognizable theaters. So we had a guard that would sit at the door, and you'd have to sign in to get in the building if you were a guest. Like, we had passes, so I would just go in. So he must have been on break or something. And I don't even know how this guy got in. But like my office, like the elevator's doors would open. You'd walk right into the reception area is where I sat. And one time this guy came in, and he was probably a younger kid. And he walked in and he had a cape on and fangs. And he goes, I'm a vampire. And I said, dude, I'm from Toledo and I will jump over this desk and beat you down Toledo style. And he's like, oh, sorry. And he walked out. I'm like, I ain't afraid of no vampires.
Yeah.
I'm from Toledo, honey. You're going to get a whooping. And not a stake through the heart.
Yeah. So one of the last vampires I want to talk about is a very, very important member of history.
Who?
In 1972 became the first appearance of Count von Count. Do you know who Count von Count is?
No. Nope.
He was a mysterious but friendly vampire that the Count's main role was to teach children about counting skills on Sesame Street. His first appearance His first appearance was with Bert and Ernie.
Oh.
Yeah, he was counting blocks or something. I don't remember.
If I remember right, I think he was purple.
Yes.
His skin was purple.
Yes, he's purple. I have a picture of him right in front of me.
Count Van Count.
For some reason, that popped in my head, and I'm like, I got to look him up real quick.
Well, there's that and Count Chocula.
Count Chocula is better. I mean, anybody that drinks chocolate. I did see.
Booberry. Remember Booberry cereal?
No. Okay, rabbit hole time. Okay. We haven't had a good rabbit hole in a long time.
We have not.
I was on Facebook, believe it or not.
What?
And I saw a picture of a girl with drinking the Hershey's chocolate out of the bottle.
Uh-huh.
And the caption says, I use this bottle as my water bottle at the gym to drive people nuts.
That's a good one.
That's a good idea.
Well, you could put your blood in it and then nobody would know. You would just be like, it's syrup.
Why couldn't we just drink the chocolate?
Good. Yeah. I have chocolate running in my veins. Blood suckers.
Chocolate suckers. Oh,
don't forget about Blackula.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Blackula.
The 70s vampire with soul.
Oh, I don't have any music for that.
Bow chicka bow wow. I think that's where Bow chicka bow wow came with.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, I don't know. Anyways.
All right. Before we leave, we want to mention about the next event that we have. Uh-huh. It's in a couple of weeks.
Yay.
We're going to be at Midwest Parafest here in Toledo. Yes. Come on out. Everybody's going to be there, including me.
Yep. Joe will be there in his vampire outfit. And I'm just kidding. He only wears his cape on Tuesdays.
So, yeah, the Toledo Yacht Club. Look it up. It's off Summit Street, it's called. Basically, the easiest way is just drive down till you see the Coast Guard sign. It's all in the same driveway. Drive on till just drive back until you can't drive back no more, and you'll be at the building.
And what's interesting, too, is there's a VFW hall across the main street from the entrance, and it's VFW Post 222.
Yeah. So come out and see us. Tell us your stories. I've got a couple interviews lined up already. Jeff Belanger took the lead, helped us out, or I shouldn't say helped us out, helped Erie Shores Paranormal out. They had a cancellation, one of the speakers, and Jeff jumped in and said he'll be there.
I can't wait to hear him. I'm sure, betcha, he's from New England. He probably doesn't have some vampire stories. Yeah, we're going to have to ask him.
Yeah.
But thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. I do post the shows every week on Twitter. Check out our Facebook page. Check out our website, www.222paranormal.com. And listen to us on your favorite podcast outlet. If you like it, leave a positive rating review.
There you go.
And share the show. If we post our show, you can share it with all your friends and they can listen. And we will talk to you next week.
All right. And let's listen to some Crud, who, by the way, June 22nd in Hell, Michigan, Crud live.
Wow.
Be there. I will be there. Of course I'll be there. It's Crud. All right. Goodbye, everyone.
See you next week.